The Church of England doesn't have modern saints, so it clings to the memory of many people it believes deserve the honour. One of those is the late Bishop George Bell, pacifist and friend of the poor. There were statues and buildings named for Bishop Bell. That was until he was accused, almost 40 years after his death, of sexual abuse. But was there enough evidence to back the claim? And has the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, been too quick to believe the accusation? Welby's now under pressure from some of Britain's most prominent historians and jurists to back down because he said a cloud hangs over the memory of the late bishop. The editor of the Church Times, Paul Handley, explained the saga of George Bell.
He was the Bishop of Chichester and came to prominence during the Second World War. Many people believe that he could have been the Archbishop of Canterbury, but his humanitarian stand during the war, criticising the severe bombing of Germany, because he had many contacts and many friends with non-Nazi Germans, led to his being looked at in the shade by the British establishment. So he was a successful bishop of a diocese in the southern part of Britain for the rest of his career, had a huge international presence as well.
The current Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, even used the reference, I think, the term saintly about him. I mean, the Anglican Church doesn't have very many modern saints, but would George Bell have fallen into that category?
Yeah, he's remembered in the Anglican calendar. Down in the diocese, there is a retreat house named after him, or was until the latest scandal blew up.
Now, just remind us of this scandal, because this has traumatised, I don't think that's an overstatement, much of the Church of England.
The Church of England, like the Church all over the country and all over the world, is coming to terms with the nature of sexual abuse. There have been abusers within the Church. They've been discovered, but then their past has been covered up. Dealing with living abusers is bad enough, but at least they can answer the charges against them. Mm. When you have somebody who is now dead and has been dead since 1958, and an accusation is made, then you've got a serious problem because you cannot hear the other side. So in the case of George Bell, a woman went to the diocesan authorities in 1995 and complained that he had, in those days it would have been termed interfered, he'd interfered with her as a child. The diocesan authorities did nothing. She repeated her accusation 3 or 4 years ago, and there was a quiet investigation of her charges, and the diocese took legal advice and paid her, I think it was £16,000 compensation. Mm. And this was made public because a diocese can't pay that sort of money without announcing what it's for.
And this payment was made to this woman, the name that she's been using is Carol, on the basis of civil threshold of evidence. I think that's what the Archbishop of Canterbury has said, you know, that on the basis of probability, but it didn't reach a criminal threshold.
That's right. The argument is that payment on the basis of a civil case, then the balance of probability is enough without admitting guilt to lead to action of this sort. And he's said that quite correctly too, in a criminal court, Bell would not have been convicted because there is not proof of guilt.
But the story doesn't end, Paul, with this payment to Carol, who says that she was abused by the late Bishop George Bell, because a subsequent inquiry found what about George Bell and the accusations made against him?
There was such a row because George Bell is regarded as one of the Anglican heroes, if not saints, and eventually the Archbishop appointed a legal expert, Lord Carlisle, to look at the way the Church had handled the matter. He was never appointed to review the case and decide whether Bell was guilty or innocent, but he dug through how the Church had handled the matter, the legal advice it had taken, what the insurers had done and so on, and concluded that essentially the Church had handled it badly, that it oughtn't to have made the payment, and certainly it oughtn't to have published the name of Bell and announced what was happening. There's a big wrangle in this country about when somebody's accused of abuse, whether they have the right to be considered innocent until proved guilty. The police in a few high-profile cases have published the name of the accused in the hope that other victims will come forward.
And this is the bone of contention, though, with the George Bell case.
because we had one single accuser, Carroll. Did anything else flow from that?
No, nobody else came forward. There was a slightly complicated account of a journalist in a local paper who then never came forward with any evidence of what she'd written. But beyond that, all that the publication of the name has elicited is a huge amount of support for Bell. And many people who knew him, and the latest thing is a letter from choristers at the time in Chichester, who all talked about his moral probity and his ethical standards and how inconceivable it would be for him to have done anything like this.
As I understand, Paul, what is not necessarily in contention is the woman, Carol's belief that she was abused, but what, the suggestion that maybe it's a case of mistaken identity, that she's confused? I mean, what is the story there?
It's impossible for anybody outside to know about this because we're not being given access to Carol's testimony. All we can go on is that the Archbishop of Canterbury is convinced by it, the authorities in the Diocese of Chichester are convinced by it. What we do know is that she was walked through the bishop's house in Chichester and recalled various incidents in various rooms. So it is a problem because we have a convincing testimony, but that we don't have access to it, so we can't make independent judgments about it. There are people who've said, well, given the layout and the use of the bishop's palace at the time, it could have been another clergyman or one of many other clergymen who were using the palace at the time. So there are doubts which we cannot resolve.
It's a really interesting inversion of the current situation that's afflicting churches all around the world. Churches are being criticised for the way that they handled the victims. In this case, the Anglican Church and even the Archbishop of Canterbury, very sensitive to the question of sexual abuse within his church, he's actually being accused of failing to do some measure of justice to the accused. It's an interesting inversion.
Yes, and I can understand why he takes that line, because too often, and one particular case comes to mind, it is the person who's been accused who gets the sympathy. The case of Bishop Peter Ball, the former Bishop of Gloucester, for years accusations were made against him which were dismissed because these people were damaged or possibly after something, and therefore the hierarchy closed ranks around him for quite inconscionable amounts of time and for no real reason. So Justin Welby is rightly, in my view, anxious not to be seen to be doing that. But we have a problem where this cannot be resolved. There is no proof of guilt. Therefore, Bell's supporters are saying, well, he needs to be declared as innocent as he was before the accusation was made. Mm. But the accusation has been made, and that can't be forgotten.
Let me quote to you what the Bishop of Peterborough, Donald Alistair, has said about this practice of naming accused abusers, not proven abusers, while keeping the names of their accusers anonymous. He says that, in the case of George Bell, there's one accuser, it hasn't been backed up by anyone else. This is proof that this system of publicising the names of accused is fraught with moral danger, moral hazard. What does the church think about this?
The difficulty is that this is a live debate, I think, and it's happening in parallel with survivors who are criticising the church monthly about the way the church has ignored them, the way the church has disregarded their testimony. Therefore, for the Archbishop to declare Bell innocent despite the existence of a testimony against him puts him in an impossible position.
I mean, does it put him in a perilous position? I see the London Daily Telegraph quoting a few days ago, people saying this could cost ultimately Justin Welby his job. I mean, is it making his own position perilous?
Not at all. Because we recognise the difficulty of the situation he's in. I mean, I don't believe he's handled it particularly adroitly, but nonetheless, everybody is aware that any firm decision of innocence or guilt, as a court would like to make, is impossible in this situation. Mm. So he cannot be declared guilty, but neither can complete exoneration be possible. Had the church done things differently, if it had refused to make the payment, if it had made the payment under terms of anonymity, if it had decided that it simply wasn't possible to know but there was a victim and therefore the victim needed some form of compensation, then I think honour would have been satisfied and right would have been done. Mm. But because Bell's name was publicised and because nobody's been able to clear this up. I can't see Welby backing down. He's had the opportunity to reflect on what he's said. He's trying to say both that Bell is a hero and also there is a cloud over him.
Mm.
But that's not how people regard their heroes. If there is a cloud, then the person is no longer heroic.
Paul Handley, editor of the Church Times in Britain, and you're with Andrew West.